It's like it's been 2 years almost.
2022, the year of our Lord.
Oh, now you're Christian now. This is the year of our Lord now, all of a sudden. but it's so cool. Welcome back to Sports Round after a very long hiatus that we had not planned for. We've been trying to record in between. I've moved twice.
Yeah. I've moved once.
You've moved once. I have now a 2-year-old going on a 12-year-old.
Dude, she's grown.
Listen, oh, man. It's quick. She runs the kindergarten. Like she just
of course she's a thug from South Africa. Sorry, she's got thug South African genes in her. Like, yay.
Like, I drop her off every day and I'm like, bye, Jasmine. And she's just like, looks at me like, get your ass out of here. You sent by for. Yeah. You know? Yeah, unreal. Unreal. Yeah, you know, being in Rottweiler has actually been good for us because, you know, I don't travel as much and I'm not as, you know, I mean, not as tired. And we've changed jobs and, you know, that comes with a whole different political sphere. And yeah, man. Hey, but we talk sports. We still have our group with Miles Channels who we've got to get on. Huh?
We talk trash like, you know, hey, it just rolls out of our mouths, particularly out of my
life. I blame Cat Williams for that.
Yeah, when that man has set alight the universe.
I blame Cat, man. Cat is has allowed us all to say what's on our minds 24/7.
Even though ironically it somehow fits into what Elon Musk is also trying to do with Twitter. Like, just talk your nonsense. Am I allowed to use language?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, talk your shit. But unfortunately with what Elon Musk has done to X. What is now X or Twitter? I don't know. I'm hardly on there. I'm hardly on there. I actually perused there yesterday, the day before. But yeah. So, point is, we're back and we're gonna talk stuff. Super Bowl happened this weekend. Kansas City Chiefs. Six Nations has been on for its second week. We've also been looking at some Rugby Europe championship, which involves the country that I live in, Germany. And we look forward to, I believe, the NBA All-Star Weekend, where it's actually going back. The game is going back to East versus West. As they've tinkered.
Yeah.
Oh, brew. Yes. It was so weird. You know what? I think for a couple of years it was great. But also the guys just weren't playing. They were just fooling around. And then they tried to add in the score that you had to get to this score by, oh, you know, the dunk contest up until last year was a snooze fest because, you know, Levine and Aaron Gordon are not doing it. And then Matt McClung, you know, for you know, who says white man can't jump? That little boy could jump, man. So that's been happening. And, you know, we're going to kick it right off with what's obviously happened in the last 24 hours, which has been the Kansas City Chiefs have repeated as Super Bowl. Is this 54?
50 was in 2016, so this would be 58.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I said 50. Yeah. Oh, I don't know where I got 54 from. Yeah, good maths. Yeah, clearly that school of mine that I went to. And teach me much in the way of mathematics. I'd gone to bed because I had no intention of actually watching it. And then at 3 o'clock this morning, I was like wide awake. I was like, okay, well at least I can catch the second half. And at that point, the 49ers were ahead, I think, 10 points to 3. And Doody fluffed the kick, one of the kicks. He tried to kick it low and it got blocked. And I will tell you this much. I thought going down to the wire, I actually thought the 49ers were going to win.
I thought the Chiefs were going to steal it. It's just, you know, you're a Patriots fan. Think of when you won those 7 championships, how many games you pulled out of the fire. It's not like the Patriots would beat teams 17-0, 16, like, as you know, teams that are dominant in rugby. I think they've got it in that DNA now within Kansas that we can just go and steal the game. That's what they did to us against the Ravens. The Ravens were getting back into that AFC championship, and they found a way. I still suspected that if the 49ers do not win inside regulation time, and they don't score first from that coin toss, they're going to have a problem. And it was just inevitable. That Mahomes, dude, just when you think you've got him, he slips out of those tackles. He slips out of a blitz. And he'll either throw a pass from hell or he will take yardage. He'll eat a chunk out of yardage from whatever he needs to get to. And it's just inevitable. They're as inevitable as Thanos.
Dude. There you go again. But you know, I think there's a part of it is like I don't pretend to be the biggest fundy on the sport, because, you know, it's a very complicated game if you not watched it for a while. But his management of the game is crazy, right? And as it was winding down, and they drove, because I thought when the 49ers had gone for the field goal, and he gets it, it was like a little chip shot for him as well, right? It was really like, boop, okay. I was like, okay, well, you know what, the whole thing about the 49ers the whole year was defense. Their defense has been really great. They've been stacking back. They've been, you know, hitting at the line. And then Mahomes comes in and drives them down the field. They get to the target line and then some. And he kicks the field goal and we go to overtime. And the amazing part to me about it all is, as I was watching the game, I just was like, how quickly they turned around to say, okay, we've got to go 70 yards, because, you know, the sport is in yards. Let's do this as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And that's exactly what they did. Yeah. Okay, they made a mistake here or there, but they actually used the time. And I think what really sealed it was the fact that they had to go, was it 4-1 or something? And Mahomes just took it in himself and slid in. And I was like, okay, you know, they had time, then they set up. And then when overtime started, I was like, I was like, okay, well, if you get the ball first and you score, I didn't realize, I thought scoring meant field goal as well. But okay, touchdown obviously is better. It's 3 points more. I think they could have and should have pushed harder to try and score a touchdown, the 49ers.
Did you notice how they were, when you say harder, the minute they put the ball on its feet, the minute they ran, they were breaking through the Chiefs. I think they should have put the ball on the ground a lot more than passing. Or if they're going to pass, it should be the first down as opposed to the third down, because then that's a lot more predictable. You could see that the 49ers were just about to score a touchdown until Purdy made the incorrect decision as to which running route to throw down. That changed the game.
That was the thing for me. He was managed. It was so interesting. Because he's very. The word I want to use is emotionless, but I mean, he's very plain Jane. He doesn't really wear it on his face much. Like, I guess at that level of the game, and I think in that position, because I do have to agree with what some people say. I do think it is one of the toughest positions in all of sports. I do see that. Close second being a 10 at international rugby level. But, you know, at that level, you know, there's so much going on, and he doesn't give much away. And I think they should have let him air it out. I think his arm is better than they allowed it to be towards the end of the game. And you know, there was, you know, I mean, Christian McCaffrey also, I think I did, the one time I did tweet, I said, I think he, for me, was the MVP if they were going to win. He that boy is good, man. I mean, he even goose-stepped somebody, and just, it was great times.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, what it always boils down to is, you know, it's just game management. How do you manage the game? How do you manage the clock? And if you're Patrick Mahomes, you've been there three times now, right? You've been there three times. So it becomes now so much, it's habitual now. You understand the moment. You understand the game. And what they did in that overtime was just, it was remarkable. Yeah. Kudos to Travis Kelce for still managing to keep his job and whilst trying to kill his coach.
Dude, he's near retirement age, no? He's like 34, 35.
Is he? Is he 34?
33. Is that it? He's not a young man. He's not a young man. Let's just say Mahomes found him.
He's not a spring chicken.
Yeah. And look, I saw the excuse that he forgot himself, that he was dealing with a man approaching his 70s and got a little bit too boisterous. It was much ado about nothing. It looks bad because it's Travis Kelce, and Travis Kelce is Taylor. So that's why it was blown out of proportion. If there was not that attachment, we'd have been like, ah, a legend gets carried away in the heat of the moment. Oh, it is so understandable, and it's part of the sport. But because of now, he's a sideshow. In America's most divisive team, we've blown it out of proportion.
Well, I don't know if you saw Antonio Brown tweeted out that he would have been kicked off the team if he did that shit.
So. Like, and he said, and then somebody responded to that tweet saying that because he was so vital to the Chiefs' cause, that's the only reason he was kept on the field.
I mean, okay. That's a small microcosm of what. You know, that will be it will be dealt with, of course. It will be, you know, there will be a conversation about it. I think heat of the moment, you will do and say a lot of things that, you know, these things happen. If you think you need to be more a part of the offense, right, everybody's going to say that. Everybody's going to say, I need to be more involved. You know, they're not coming to me. I need to be more involved. Oh, okay. Right. But he reacts, and they fumbled the ball. They got, look, you know what? It's all forgotten because they won the game. Had they not won the game, it would have come back to this, you know, disrespect of the head. You know, you can just hear the rumor mill, the media rumor mill, as you know very well. They start creating a little story about, oh, he's been upset for a while, excuse me. He's been upset for a while with the team and the makeup of this. And, you know, it must be tough for him dating arguably the world's biggest musician right now, and come on, you know, great
it
game.
Would have been yeah.
True, I mean, great game. I think kudos to them. I think Patrick Mahomes is the fact that he's won three Super Bowls. I mean, when did he get drafted? I can't remember when he got drafted.
2017.
Okay, and he's won three Super Bowls.
He's been there every single season. He's been to the AFC Championship. Think about it.
Every single season, he's been to the AFC Championship.
And he's been to the Super Bowl three times.
What's that, Tom Brady does not even have numbers, I guess. So in 7 years, he's...
Six times. Yo. You literally need the Chiefs' permission. Like, we had to ask the Patriots for their permission to go to the Super Bowl. That's where I think a lot of the hating is coming from the fact that we thought, hey, Tom Brady's out of the way, the AFC is going to be a lot more. Not that the AFC was never competitive. It was very competitive when the Patriots were boss, but we all knew there was the one king.
Well, now it's the Michael Jordan analogy, isn't it? It's like, okay, Michael's retired now, you know. Now it gives everybody else a chance. Or LeBron is aging, so it gives other teams a chance. I mean, LeBron went to nine straight finals. It's just nuts. And then, yeah, maybe the win ratio is not in his, yeah, maybe the win ratio is not in his favor, but I mean, 9 times, that's nuts. You know,
people are not eating.
Or 10 times.
Can't eat Thanksgiving. Literally, 4 years in a row. 4 years in a row. There's been an AFC North team in the Super Bowl. That's us Ravens, Steelers, and Bengals and Browns. And apart from Joe Burrow, who I think is the one player who's going to challenge him consistently, Mahomes has seen them off. That's the second time now the 49ers have lost to Mahomes in the Super Bowl, on top of the Rams in last season. So guys cannot eat. No, not the Rams, the Eagles. People can't eat because of Mahomes. And technically, I think the danger there, the real Don, is Andy Reid. It also comes down to coaching. We all know that there's been so many quarterbacks who just needed the right combination with management as well as coaching. And the Chiefs realized we've got ourselves a gem here. We've got an everlasting well of wins. And hence why they said, Patrick Mahomes, yes, $500 million for the next 10 years. We'll just make a plan. We'll make a plan about how we move the deck chairs around on this ship to ensure that either way, even if you've got a log of wood and a traffic cone as your wide receivers, we're still going to the Super Bowl and we're still going to win it.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, you know, because the knock on Andy Reid for the longest time was he couldn't, you know, when it would come down to the last 2 minutes of a game, he couldn't make the right call, or he couldn't, you know, he would, what they would say, he would swallow his mic set. And now, you know, but again, what does it boil down to? It boils down to experience. I mean, he went there a couple of times to the Eagles, and it didn't, you know, it never happened for them.
It's as if he only started like 10, 12 years ago. He's been there since the 90s. He's been going to Super Bowl since the early 2000s, man.
I mean, yeah, you've got to, you know, Donovan McNabb and them. Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Terrell Owens season. Yeah, I mean, that's just a right in the mix with Brady and company.
Yes. Brady, right, so, and Peyton Manning, who was.
Right, right. So, you know, and then there was a young dude by the name of Aaron.
And Aaron Rodgers.
Huh?
Aaron Rodgers.
No. Aaron Rodgers.
My goodness, what a.
So if you look back and you think, like, okay, he's been around that long. And look at the talent that's there now.
Yeah. Which, that's where we. I know this is where suppositions and opinions come in. Like, Tom Brady had to keep those guys at bay. Who is Patrick Mahomes having to keep at bay? Burrow, Allen, Lamar Jackson. Who else? It's not a super generation of quarterbacks. That we can agree on. Not that we're gonna knock his achievement.
Because I mean, I don't know if we can agree like for like in that sense. But it's a very different era because now they move more. You know, they can throw down the middle right now. You know, 10, 15 years ago, you weren't throwing it down the middle. You know, you'd get your ass beat. The rules have changed. The game is more open. It's different. It's just a different game. And maybe like for like in terms of the physicality of the sport and how the sport has changed. Okay, like for like, very different. But if you look at these athletes now, these guys can move, man. They could probably, some of them could be receivers and running backs themselves anyway. As we line down this topic,
it's football. We are sad that the people who don't care about football, who made this Taylor Swift thing a sideshow, get to celebrate it. But I'm genuinely happy for the Kansas City Chiefs to see a city that's out of the way in the United States, a flyover city, salt of the earth people celebrating the way it does, as opposed to it being Los Angeles, Texas, New York, Chicago. I'm really happy for Mizzou because that's all they have now.
On that note, we'll take a break. And we're back after having a little coffee break. We're discussing spirituality and hairstyles, which we will leave alone for now. Something you've been dying to sort of get on, because he's been very hurt. And if you didn't know, it was the African Cup of Nations, and and you know, okay. So let me give you a little.
This is how I feel.
So the African Cup of Nations. One of the nice things about the African Cup is the guys just play. You know, there is team strategy and all that, but you know, there's the African style of football is not so regimented like here in Europe. It's very, I would say it's almost like the Copa America, just not as flairful and as skillful. Which I thought you, I knew you would love that analogy, that I'd even gone that deep into it.
Yeah, I'm not even offended.
Nope. And we started talking about it, and one of my players here, who's from Cameroon, you know, African Cup of Nations, I'd completely forgotten. You know, there's me. And he says, what do you think, South Africa? I said, we're going to do Bafana things. because that's... Right. I mean, that's been the knock on us for the last...
You 24 know, years.
Right. It's been a while since we've... You know, when did we win the African Cup? When was the last 96, time we won the African Cup?
96. That's now...
Was that...
8 years ago.
So 96, we were in the we won the thing. When were we in the final?
8 seconds when the final second we lost place. To Egypt. 2000 when we made third place after being knocked out by Nigeria in the semifinals in their AFCON.
And then we went through a whole period
that
of.
Was it. And then that was it. We just packed.
We've been supporting teams like Gabon and Zimbabwe. And,
or whoever beats Nigeria. You know
whoever beats Nigeria. Or we had to go down to the Duck with Lewis system. Those of you who don't understand the Duck with Lewis system. It's like this cricket. And you know, when it rains, you got to figure out the run rate. And, you know, we had to start figuring out Pythagorean theorems. And then I really got to give Hugo Bruce a bit more respect, actually, because I keep calling him Laptop Man. So SAFAS, the South African Football Association, had announced this new coach a couple of years ago, and in their infinite wisdom, didn't fly the man down. They had a press conference with him, so they did a Skype call, essentially, or a Zoom call. And he's on the laptop screen. They provided no sound in order to be able to speak with him. They connected. It's just dreadful. It just speaks of rank amateurism. Yeah, exactly. It just speaks of rank amateurism. And he's come in and he's basically said, hey, you know, we need a whole new team, actually. You can't, the current crop of guys you have now, you can't hope to build anything. And he's gone about his task very diligently. Okay, he's picked a very Sundowns heavy squad, which makes sense. And then we hit Namibia, and we took care of Namibia. Because I didn't see them. Yeah, I didn't watch the first game. Mali, we did what we said we were gonna do. Mm-hmm. Do Bafana things. Then Namibia came along, and Namibia, we discarded them. Then it was like, okay. Then they drew again, right?
Tunisia.
Then they drew again. Then it was really like, okay. But round of 16. Then Cap Verde comes along. They beat Cap Verde.
Well-drilled team, by the way. That is a good team. That island of 600,000 people, and they're very beautiful women. very well drilled.
Leave the woman alone, bro.
South African men have just been.
Yeah, they're all going to Cape Verde now. They're all going to go on holiday.
Can't even afford a ticket from Joburg to Luhuzi. Can't even pay for a Greyhound.
December. okay, December, they'll be at least they have electricity. And then so Kapverd comes along, well, as you say, well put together team, well played, well drilled, very well oiled machine. They get taken care of. We go to penalties in the next game.
You forgot Morocco. Right?
Sorry.
The best team in Africa. The first World Cup semifinals, and Bafana just chopper.
I honestly thought Morocco was going to take care of Bafana. Didn't happen that way. We took care of Morocco. Then we got then the ball rolled. So this is where I'm going to start depressing you a bit. They roll on. They make it around the 16. They then progress. And I remember, because I'm so far removed from South Africa and really Africa because of where I live. I'm not on the pulse of the situation. I'm not on the beat. And as what happens in all sports at home is as soon as the national team, remember, we were sticking behind our Cricket World Cup. We were all of a sudden, come on, I'm a Proteas. Yeah, now we were, I'm a, because the Springboks did Springbok things. Excellence. And, they did Springbok things. And then the Proteas come along. And we are expecting things out of the Proteas. But, they've been choking since 99. Hey, Alan Donald-ish. And then then we start saying, all right, who do we look at? We start, okay, Bafana is gaining traction. And you sent me a video of the dude who's upset with the public. He says, don't come here.
Hammering the public.
Don't come here. We should actually put up a link to it when we post this episode. And he just absolutely nails the public. He said, don't come here with your... Keep your Springboks and keep your Proteas. Don't come here and now claim you are Bafana fans. But I remember asking you guys in the group, what do we look like? And you were adamant. You were like, hey, this is a team that is beatable. And now I'm going to let Keba have a monologue about what happened and why it didn't happen that way.
So the South Africans ran into their Jollof brothers, our overlords.
The other thing that I forgot, sorry to cut you off, but don't come and claim Amapiano for yourselves, Nigerians. Don't stop it. Just leave Amapiano.
Bafana come up against the most vulnerable Nigerian team we've ever played. And you could tell that Ivorian crowd was behind us. They wanted us to win because their West African rivals are playing. So obviously they want to see their West African rivals. South Africa do what South African soccer players do. We don't know how to convert. We create opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. And Victor Osimhen and your William Troostekong, they're watching. They're waiting. They're going to get that one chance. Nigeria gets that one chance. They sucker punches. But then, because this is a new Bafana team, they go into the trenches. Bafana, I've known for the last 20 years, the minute something goes against them, down tools, tail between their legs, and they go. And they decide, no. Because Hugo Bruce has made them fighters. They are full of fighters. That's another thing. Fighting more than technical ability, if you know that you're a currently mid national soccer team. And they fought, concede a goal that turns out to have been a penalty at the other end. We equalize thanks to Teboho Mokoena, the impressive Mokoena. And then the moment that will haunt me for the rest of eternity, the rest of my life. Bafana has a free kick in a dangerous area. Mokoena hits a low shot, difficult shot that Nwabili, who plays for Chippa United, funny enough, in South Africa, Paris, to the best right back in on the continent, arguably Kulusomudau, with just the goals to aim for, no Nigerian to bother him, to hinder him, hits it over the goalposts. the moment that would have sent them packing and the moment that would have sent South Africa into the final.
The thing that got me about that was, the thing that got me about that was, if you go back and you watch it, as the ball is actually parried to him, and he aims for the Namib Desert, because that's what irritated me, right? Because there was inside of him to his left, there's two guys who are onside, so he the ball is parried to him, he can make three decisions. He could stop the ball and pass, because there's no way as the two defenders behind him will be able to get back. That guy has a tap in. He could leave it for the next guy, tap in, or he just controls the ball and pops it straight into the bottom right corner, bottom left corner, I guess, at that point.
Maybe he dove and hit it.
He could have, you know, and so when I watched it back, I was like, hey, bro, like, what we... And I know what I know what happened.
It's a moment. We think we could have done better, but
I would have probably, because you know what, if you've ever played any five-a-side football or any pickup football, as we, you know, as you would say, like just playing around, everybody goes for the power shot.
Yes, because that.
Because we think that is, because we think that is the most secure thing, and it's not. If he just taps the ball and if he just guides the ball into the goal. And that, for me, is one of the major differences between a players that play at the top level here in Europe and the players who play at the top level in South Africa. Because we have this thing where we want to... I think it's just an African thing. We want to shoot from here to Newland Stadium. I don't get it. Why? Just tap the ball. And I just feel like...
it's
composure, that's the word. We lacked composure in that moment, and we brought that composure in the third, fourth player, to me. And that's that thing, right? And we've spent our time, I'm going to let you come back to your point, but we've spent our time discussing the issues, and then Milo is saying, oh, there's a few boys who weren't playing because they play in the States or something, and it's their off season, and so Bruce didn't want to. They could be out of shape. They could be on, you know, you mess up the rhythm. The thing that you were saying and that you've been saying for the longest time is, we actually have a team that we can build upon. But it goes back to the age-old issue right now, which is Safa. And how we. So one of the things we talk about a lot in other sports is how we don't create enough of a pathway for the next gen.
Yes.
Right? And this is something you are all over. That pathway thing, that thing of creating the... because the PSL is not a product I'm dying to watch.
Exactly.
I'll watch one game a year.
There's a patent reason. It's in the quality. That's why.
I'll watch one game a year if I can. And that's the Soweto Derby, just based on what it's about. I have no interest in watching the PSL. And that, to me, is actually quite sad. You know? But your point, going back to your point, was that we're talking about composure. We're talking about, but what are we lacking back home that brings in these strikers, that brings in these players, that brings in sort of this nucleus of players that we can build upon for the next, I don't know, let's hope we make the World Cup.
You know, sometimes we can keep blaming the structures and everything and whatnot, but sometimes it's also personal responsibility of these players. Why is it that countries with less resources, like West Africa, like all across West Africa, are producing players who can go to play for Manchester United, Real Madrid, Barcelona, the very top? They've got far less than we do. Our players have got facilities from here to Cape Town and back. We have everything. I know coaching is an issue, but sometimes it's personal responsibility. Our players, it's like, compared to, can you not decide, Witzeking, you know what, I want to go and play for Brentford or for Middlesbrough or for Newcastle where I want to mark Haaland out of the game. Or I want to go blaze an absolute thunderbolt past Onana when I play for Arsenal. Mm. Look, we've stripped this damn animal down to its bone as to what's wrong with South African football. But at the same time, these players, what do they want? Like, what do you expect? Don't you want to lift yourself? Because think about it. You have it so well. Foreigners come into South Africa, that's a pathway for them to go into Europe because they've realized that's why I'm going to be spotted. That's why I'm going to be spotted. There are players now from Nigeria and from Ivory Coast who play in South Africa who are now going to go overseas. So what are you gleaning from that as a soccer player? Why can't you say, I want to be that striker who hits 25 goals a season? You are coached up to your eyes. There's theory, there's practicing, but why can't you do it consistently on a football field? So, for the first time in a while, because we've mentioned Mamelodi Sundowns, Mamelodi Sundowns wants to become the first African team to win the Club World Cup, I think. I have had the opportunity of being exposed to their structures on a day visit to Klorko, and I can tell that they've got the ambition to want to rule African soccer. They are that close to winning the Champions League, and the Champions League takes them to the Club World Cup. I think they are structuring that club in such a way that the next time they go to the Club World Cup, because in 2016 they were embarrassed, the next time they go to the Club World Cup, they can take on a Boca Juniors and slap them, and then have Man City in the semi-final and shock them and put in the result of the century, and then probably win it. So sometimes it's about ambition. Sometimes it's personal responsibility. I'm growing. I'm understanding as a man in his 30s that sometimes, man, you got to go get that bread. That bread is not going to bring itself to you. Somebody else is going to fight you for that bread. And whatever we're getting wrong in structurally in South Africa, I also think that these players need to look at themselves as well.
But let's look at the positive side. Can we draw on this? Can we draw on? Most
definitely, because you know now the public has been enticed by Bafana. They are now in the middle of the World Cup campaign. How about we start going to the stadiums again? And Safa thinks cleverly about this one. Take these games to people who can access. Don't take them to an empty FNB stadium or Moses Lobby. Take them to where people can watch, fill out a 20,000 seater and carry Bafana through these games so that they can go to Mexico, Canada, and the United States. Because that Ivorian crowd adopted Bafana. You could see they were backing Bafana because they were like, these minnows are playing with their heart and soul. And the players drew from that and put in the best performance scene for a long, long time.
Well, my hope is that there's something to draw on. I'm glad now there's a little bit more. I think also, as you know, one thing as South Africans, we are very ons is vol kakmet, is for our foreign listeners, we're full of shit, is that we bandwagon things. So one of the things that has made, to me, that made rugby really popular is the 07 World Cup, to me, right? From the 07 World Cup, there's just been steady growth. Okay, 11 wasn't great. 15 was a disaster.
Lost to Japan.
Yeah, you know. But then what happens from 15 to 19 to now to 23 is if you go back to 2000, and I'm hoping, my hope is that the investment will come that people would want to own sports teams or own soccer clubs and actually create pathways, because, you know, there's so many kids who play the sport that love the game, and I think that can be inspired by this Bafana result, these results, and the way that they played through, and now there's a new group of household names, you know, coming through, and I mean, my man in goals, Williams, man, dude, is, you know,
he's now a household, you know, across Africa and the world,
right?
The world knows it.
And that puts him on the map for some, but it just we should start having this thing where we create, again, what do we always say? It goes down to the pathway. And if we write on the pathway, and if we're correct on the pathway, the sport will flourish. Right, let's take our next break. And when we come back, we will be discussing third place. Yes, we finished third. Yeah. And when we come back, we will be discussing the Six Nations, some rugby, and we will head down into the NBA All-Star Weekend, and that'll be us. So join us in a second. Here we go. We're going into the business end of our little chat. We're trying to be more proficient now, where we keep things to about 20 minutes. That we also lose ourselves because we have a tendency to get sidetracked. Me most of all, because it's just my ADD. I just say these things. And then Kev is trying to check his hairstyle. Wait till you see the video of this, because it's going to be great. It's going to be a man touching up his hair all the time. one day, you know what we should do one day? One day we should actually, we'll do this in the next, because we got time this week to do a build up for the weekend even. We're going to do a little background on actually how we know each other and how this has come about. And because I think we never really did that before. We just jumped in and, gave much background. But anyway, so as we move forward and as we go along, it's been 2 weeks of Six Nations. There's been Rugby Europe Championship as well. There has been, URC has been going. What we forget is at the end of 2023 in October, South Africa were crowned Rugby World Champs after a thrilling final. I mean, you know, you should go back and watch that final, especially the last 10 minutes. And I would have hated to be Chez and Colby for those last 10, 15 minutes. I really would have hated it. But South Africa beats New Zealand. The forerunners for the tournament really were all the Northern Hemisphere teams. Mm-hmm. So Ireland was the world's number one at the time. France were number two, I guess, at the time, or there and thereabout. England had just gotten Steve Borthwick, so there was change in the air for England. Wales was getting Gatlin back, you know, and what a struggle that was going to be for Gats to come in. And, you know, of course, then the issue is with Gats is he past it? Is he over the hill? Is he, you know, right? And then they had their issues with strikes and union issues and, well, oh, gosh, the politics there. Italy looked if you go back to last Six Nations, everybody was like, oh my gosh, here we go. And then the Rugby World Cup happened and New Zealand really spanked them like the under 16 Bs versus the third, I would even say the second team, you know, not even the first team. It was just like, you know, it was really not
take this,
you know, they were just like, yeah, take this and get out, you know? And Scotland also kind of really underperformed.
They were the team we thought, man, this is the best Scotland team in a long time.
Right, I thought they were going to make semi-finals. I thought they were going to make semi-final. I'm not even fucking joking around. I really thought the way that they were playing, that they were going to make the semi-final. I had Ireland. I mean, they're never going to go against South Africa. I mean, that's just crazy.
I don't know why I let myself to believe that Scotland could beat us. I thought, hey, that game in Marseille, we're going to have a problem.
You know, there were points during the Rugby World Cup where I wished I could reach through my phone and strangle you, but I couldn't. Because some of those hot takes that were coming out, she was, whoa, Mans was on fire. Scotland can beat us, boys. Was like, what? What was this fucking? But what it's, and then And then what has happened is finally the Six Nations documentary has come up, which has been... It's been received well in some circles, it's been received not so well in other circles, and I just think Netflix stuck to formula and tried to sort of do this Drive to Survive type thing and didn't actually really create sort of... I want history of why, you know, why, what is so great about the Six Nations? I want the history of the Six Nations. I want origin and then build it into where we are today. Spend an episode on that. And get the players to talk about what the history means to them. But, you know, Netflix is not paying me. shout out, you know, Netflix, I'm here, you know.
I'll let you board.
I'll take that bag now. Hey, give me that bag. You know, let me know. But you do get to go inside in the insights of a lot of players and you know, the Italian team and their passion and their desire to want to grow their game. After all, you know, and you'd think like, if, you know, it's pretty much a professional situation there, but there's something is just not going. And having said all that, we've also got to look at the club rugby, which is, or the franchise rugby, which has been the URC, and the Stormers have been playing well. The Bulls have been lukewarm in South Africa. The Sharks have been uncharacteristically bad for them, for the budget that they have, for the player base they have, that something is not quite right there. The Lions have been also there and there about. You know, the Chitas, who are plying their trade in the Challenge Cup, it seemed to be doing all right. And they're based in Amsterdam, which is pretty awesome.
Surprised you haven't gone to watch it yet.
Man, bro, it's about time and logistics. that's basically what it is. And so let's leave the URC until the URC kicks off again. And let's solely focus on these last 2 weeks. And that has been the opening game, Ireland completely paddywhacks France. They just outplay them. Italy held England for a large portion of that game. I think England were quite scary. Were quite scared that it might come undone. Then we had Wales against Scotland, right? And that game was also very... Okay. So what's funny is we downstairs were having dinner. And I turned the game off because Jasmine gets distracted if we, you know. I turned the game back on. They'd gotten a yellow card. Yes. England, Wales were not supposed to be in that game at all.
Exactly.
They've clawed their way back to within a point, right? And it's like, jeepers, implosion, Scotland. You fast forward to this week. I am going to say this, and I'm not shy to say this. Scotland were very hard done by because that ball was on the ground to me.
Very controversial take. It looked logically, how you understand visual acuity or depth perception. That ball looked on the line. France wouldn't have been screwed had the try been given to Scotland. So, man... You know, when there's more controversy with TMOs than there should be. You know, 20 years ago, if that was not given, or 30 years ago, there was no TMO, it was not given, nobody would have complained.
Nobody would have cared about it.
I'm thinking about the Rugby World Cup final 1995, where we all know Ruben Krier scored that try against the All Blacks. We know that was a try, but the referee, Ed Morrison, said no. And when we got back to the 5-meter scrum and the game continued. So with all this technology and you're making decisions that are quite dodgy.
You forget the French would turn around and say, "Hey, we scored off the rolling mall in Durban."
And for some reason, I've now convinced myself that I still think that was short. For some reason, you see when it benefits you, your tone changes. I still think they were short by this much, by
I think Corbis Visa would very much agree with you because he was right there.
Yeah,
it's the thing.
And that's rugby. You accept it. Back then, we could accept that. let's just think of how much history has been made because of poor decisions. But now when you've got the technology, that then becomes a problem. And we know what we're seeing there.
As you brought up referees, have you seen the documentary on Rugby Pass?
Not yet. I want to.
You know what? I'm not gonna spoil it for you. Yes, go and have a look at it. I've started it. I've been in and out of it. You know what? When I, as a coach, when we do our contact sessions, I ask the referees that are attached to our club, to come and referee the contact thing, because it's good practice for them. Yes. It's good practice for us. Yada yada. This is hype. You all should go and check it out. It's on Rugby Pass. It's free. Rugby Pass is free. So you don't have to subscribe to it. But the referee, I think it was Barry. Let me just double confirm. Listen to me.
Okay, now,
using a double entendre.
Let's just try to be kinder. I'm going to try to be as kind as possible to referees.
I think that's always going to be one of the things with the game and with the sport, is that we're always going to question whether he made the right decision or not.
Yeah.
We're always going to... It was Nick Berry, yeah. And we're always going to say, okay, he said... He was right there. He said, I have it as held up.
Yeah.
That was from his vantage point. Is there an angle that we can look at where we can say, hey, do you guys have conclusive evidence that thing was grounded?
Yeah.
And they couldn't find any. Now, that try gets scored. Let's say the try gets scored, he makes the kick. Okay, it changes the whole complexion of the game. The game Scotland then becomes... Wins. Scotland wins. Back-to-back then, right? Now this whole competition is actually very, very different, because Ireland wins... They've gone back to back. England have now gone back to back. Right? Wales are in line for the wooden spoon right now. And so is Italy, as ever. But the rest, it's still very wide open. Because I don't think my daughter has joined the conversation. I don't think England... Is England going to Paris? Or is it the other way around?
England is going to Paris because they got slapped last year at Twickenham, as I like reminding them. That result was more satisfying than when we stole the game from them in Paris.
Okay, so this is what happens. The next match is... Okay, so they have a break. They have a break coming up. And then 24th of February weekend, Ireland plays Wales at home. Yeah, okay, we know what's going to happen there. Then Murrayfield, Scotland versus England, and then France is playing Italy.
And France could lose again because Italy has got their number in the Six Nations.
It's in Stade Pierre Mora. I don't know where that is. I would love to say that must be... It's in France. Point is, it's in France. And I thought that there is something... Okay, so we've accepted that the French are not the same without Dupont and Intermac. That we've accepted. But the bulk of the team... And shout out to... also need to talk to Coach Farrell, who picked a couple of players that didn't play this week, and I didn't do so well in my fantasy team. But... yeah, I'm currently sitting in sixth. It's not great, but you know, I think for Italy to turn the corner, there's just something not happening in that forward pack. So much of the Six Nations is so reliant on having a strong, dominant forward pack, a pack that's going to lead you around, and this is why. Why for me, Ireland does so well is their pack is so dynamic and it frees up their backs. Exactly. And this ten who I'm saying is the carbon copy of he's just, why am I forgetting people's names today?
Sexton.
Yeah, you sound forgetting people. Yeah, and me who's in the sport. But if you look at it, any 10 is going to do well when your pack is going well for it. Right? You would do well in that situation. I would do well in that situation. Never been there, but would never know. But like to toot our horns a bit. But I just think for Italy, for Garbisi and them, their backs are really, really good. They've got a really good back line. For them to sort of have that turnaround, that tight five has got to get better. And they've got decent loose forwards. They've always kind of had pretty decent loose forwards. But something has got to change with that tight five. And I don't know what it is, if it's, you know, if it's the set piece thing, if it's the broken play thing, if it's a mental thing.
I don't know, because before they had the forward pack and they didn't have the backs to ask you the right question. You remember, when you saw that forward pack, they just lacked, can we ask you enough questions with our backline players? Now it's gone or the other way around. They've got a good backline and an uncharacteristically dodgy forward pack. Maybe I read too much into Benetton's excellence. You all see, because I thought they would have been the core. Maybe I read too much into that, but I genuinely...
Or Zebra as well. I mean, Zebra is also not exactly playing well.
He's been quite poor for a couple of years. And hence why I'm very disappointed. Italy, guys, it's been 25 years in the Six Nations, and man!
So, do you think... Okay, wait, before we... Let's leave that point to the end. Yeah. It's been 25 years. It's been a while. Something needs to change. And we'll talk about what everybody, you know, what everybody's saying. You know, them getting beaten like that 36-0.
After mismanaging the game against England. They mismanaged that game, they should have beaten England.
And you see, this is so much of what were we saying about Patrick Mahomes earlier, is game management, right? It's just game management. It's just sticking to process. It's just, okay, if this doesn't work, we'll try the next thing and we'll move on. We're not gonna grind ourselves out to force it to happen.
Yes.
Okay, and I think a lot of the time, I think the Italians, because of them as a people, from what I, you know, they're so damn passionate that they want to make it happen. It must no net gaan. You know, it must happen now. And I don't think that's necessarily a recipe for greatness. Don't force that. Just carry on going through it. They're playing really well. They've got good options going along. There's just something needs to happen in that pack, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if they need to go to Kamstaltran. I don't know. No, I'm joking. You know. But it was a kind of disappointing, and a kind of disappointing display from them. And I felt like when they missed that penalty kick in the beginning, I was like,
it could derail. Who knows what those 3 points can do to you psychologically in a hot house like at Dublin? Because look, we're not expecting them to beat Ireland, but I thought they were gonna help. I totally agree, Jasmine. Italy is cut.
She's chasing the cat around. So
okay.
That's the thing to do. That's the thing to do. Look, we'll finish off them. You know, let's go through the games. The England Wales thing. I mean, Borthwick was smiling. He was very relieved to get the win. Is Warren Gatland past it? Is as my daughter decides to join, is they've got a young team, and I think they're building. I think they're building something in the right way. They lost a lot of veterans last year, even before the Rugby World Cup.
Yes.
They lost a lot of vets. They, who were, you know, impactful to that team. Yes. And
Sloan Zamit, who's now in the NFL, that's a game-breaking player who could have caused trouble at Twickenham.
Do you? Okay, right. Let's again. So I'm gonna write that down. Let's leave Zamit to the end, because I'll be amazed if he makes practice squad somewhere. I'm not saying he's not good enough. American football is a difficult sport, man. It's just but he's not part of the setup anymore. They're obviously looking different. Are they a team that is trending up or trending down, in your opinion?
Taking into account the troubled nature of Welsh rugby at the moment, because we all know that they've got problems locally.
As do the English.
Yes. As you mentioned, they've got a young squad. I've already written them off for the rest of the season. But because they're going to hang on to a lot of these players, they're not going to be like players cycled out of the system. We will be able to judge them towards the end of the year when the Southern Hemisphere goes to Europe. As for Gatland being posted or not, we don't know. But we all know that there's Warren Ball. He plays his way. Is he going to advance? Is he going to metamorphosize? Is he going to evolve with the current trends of rugby? That's a hard question, because you want Wales to be successful under him. So I can't answer the fact that he's past it. Granted, there are question marks hanging over him. But Chief, you look to be from the past. You need to get with the program. So Wales are going to have that big fat asterisk next to them. The one guy
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
The one guy who's going to have asterisks next to him, like a bigger one, would be Borthwick under England, because England played some pretty ugly rugby after they got... when they went into that World Cup, they were terrible. After they got done by Fiji, they were terrible, and they played some unappealing rugby, which was enough to get them to the semi-final, where they almost upset us, but there are many factors that go into that. I would think that right now he's more interested in grinding out results now. Grind the results out now. Try steal a result against France, or beat France, because France is there to be beaten. And then heaven help them against Ireland. Who knows what could happen? Because now they're two out of five. They're going to back themselves to get a result against... But then Scotland is away. England is the one team I'm interested in to see what to expect, because they are going to be the dark horses in terms of this current World Cup cycle towards 2027, because I've mentioned France, South Africa, New Zealand, and Ireland. What is England plotting, considering they're also struggling in terms of club rugby? I'm more interested. The bigger question has to be answered by Borthwick as opposed to Gatland.
So my thing is, there's a couple of things with regards to even Warren Ball and Warren Gatland. How is it that... Okay, he's been their coach forever. I guess he was their coach after Graham Henry, right?
Mm-hmm. And then he even went to New Zealand and came back.
Right, so he was their coach after Graham Henry. Graham Henry went back and he took over the... Yes. 2007. He went and took over the New Zealand job. Wins the World Cup. Promptly retires. So he wins the Six Nations with them, right, in 2005. Goes back for 2006-07, or end of 5-6-7. Mm-hmm. Takes them to the World Cup. They get beaten by a forward pass. And 2011 wins the World Cup. He promptly retires. Gatland is their coach all the way through, right up until 2019 World Cup. Mm-hmm. Takes in the Highlanders job and goes back.
Chiefs,
takes the Chiefs job and he goes back. Why hasn't Wales produced... they had a coach in between, which that was just disaster. And it was also COVID. And, it's tough, man.
There was a lot of this.
Why has Wales not produced anybody from home?
Yeah,
that can take over that job. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is, it looks like a nice young squad when you think about it. Mm-hmm. And if you then somehow say, if Rhys Ammett then says, I'll stay another year, 2 years, and I go for the World Cup. He would then be 26, you know. But then that's really old when you're playing American football. And it's also really old when you're playing rugby, when you think about it. Because a lot of us, remember, we started when we were 9, 8, 9, 10 years old. Right? By the time you're 16, you've been going half a decade. By the time you're 26, it's a job. Okay, and I just look at the situation and I wonder, are we not giving Gatlin enough time to gel into this thing? Because this is the nature of sports right now. So it's going to be the same thing when Bill Belichick gets a new team, which will happen. It's going to happen. He's going to get a team at some point. If it's not this season, it'll be the next season. And they're going to be like, oh, he's 5-12. So, but I mean, he's just been there for 1 year. Remember with the Patriots, he wasn't great in the beginning, and then TB12.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Then, what do you mean?
I was going to get to that point as to when you mentioned TB12 as to Gatlin.
Right. And then, so like, Gatlin has had a lot of players go, you know, they won a Six Nations. Let's not forget, they did win the Six Nations. They've won it twice, I think. And he's coached the Lions. He's not exactly a terrible coach, but that we make it out like the, you know, because I think the Americanization of coaching, now you got to go younger because it's better. You got to go younger. You know, everything's got to be younger. If it's younger, it's better. Borthwick, on the other hand, has come into a situation. They had no business being in the World Cup semifinal. They had no business. And they blamed...
Yeah.
Exactly. And they were saying in the beginning they were really struggling because they had changed their conditioning program. And it kicked in the lead-up quarterfinal, that they would sustain themselves, that if they got into the final again, they would be able to go. Okay, game didn't. It didn't happen that way. That's sports. That's the nature of sports. That's the nature of the game. That's sports. We don't know what would have happened, but that's the nature of the game. And I think, like, if when I look at those two teams in particular, okay, that England without Farrell is a completely different beast. They're trying to figure out leadership. They're trying to figure out their system as well. The way that they play with the ball. They're also trying to expose the width, but, you know, keep it tidy. And I'm like, eh? Why is this such a thing?
I would, when you mentioned TB12 and how you transformed Belichick's fortunes, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to ask in Welsh. The Welsh listeners there, please don't take this personally. Do they have enough special players in key positions who are young who can lift them? Because now they're being exposed to our culture of rugby. They play South African teams every week. It's benefited the Irish, to a certain extent, it's benefited the Italians, the Scots. What can they glean? Oh, sorry, in terms of what? Let me reword. What do they have a special group of players? Because I don't see them doing much in the under 26 nations, and they are easy beats in the URC. You only fear, I don't even know which team to fear. Like Cardiff? Cardiff is the only team you're like, oh, okay, that's a team. Do they have enough good players to lift Welsh rugby? Because now there's a situation where Osprey are taking three players from the Cheetahs who are going to be there on loan because they are shortened players for some damn reason. So the issue is, do they have Alan Wynne-Jones and Mike Phillips and James Hook and Stephen
Chipper?
Do they have those players coming through? As opposed to...
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Carry on, sorry.
England, fine. You've got Farrell gone. You're putting your hopes on Marcus Smith, who really needs to start realizing that potential. England still have good players. I believe they've got good players, and they showed us in that semi-final. Granted, the Springboks were fatigued from a draining effort against France the week before. They've added Felix Jones to their setup. Felix Jones will have to understand that when you've got Yeben Etzebeth and Franco Mostert and then Peter Steff Tutoi and then Arches Niemann and then Ketsov, dude, you could have any defense system on the planet. If you guys got, if you've got that kind of depth in reserve, you can do whatever you want. And that's their place. They seem to be placing so much hope in Felix Jones having some transformative effect on England. I don't think they've got the kind of players. They're going to have to be a lot more dynamic. You see, as you say, they're a lot more practical, a lot more forward-thinking. So England has the players. Now, I think Borthwick will have to raise it another level. We cannot sit through that cuck that they put us through in the World Cup. You're not going to win a World Cup like that, then, you know?
I'm going to say something that's quite interesting. So what I think is interesting, I mean, I don't... You know, you might think I'm talking shit. One of the good things for South African rugby is that not all of our top internationals play in South Africa.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, we have a smattering in Japan. We've got them all over the world, right? English, obviously English teams, Japan. There's something about the conditioning that they do in Japan, maybe, that when they come and play Springboks, the conditioning is, they align, obviously. But also because of the humidity aspect of Japan and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I wonder if a lot of the time, you know, because Felix Jones is clearly a master of what he does and what he knows. Is he... we should take a break, actually. Take a break. And then we hit it for the last 10 minutes. And we're back. Sorry, the segment's running a little longer, but so I for some reason I feel like the European conditioning is very different to what we do in South Africa, or and the way that, you know, certain conditioning coaches will do certain things, and the European game is very different. They're trying to play faster. They're trying to look at Ireland. It's all about work rate. It's all about mismatches and exposing the gap and creating the gap, exposing the mismatch. Lots of trickery, lots of, you know, but everybody's working damn hard together. So something that they're doing maybe in their conditioning is working for them, because France, on the other hand, in the first week looked like a JV team. Yeah. And... as we kind of get towards the end of being back, it's something that you got to look at it with the Six Nations and I guess with the URC as well. We talk about investment. You know, the Premiership has gone from, I think, 14 teams to now 10. Right? There's only 10 teams. And I remember I sent you a couple of weeks ago, I sent you a story about there's some oil barons from the Middle East area who are keen to back rugby teams. Now, this changes things, because if this happens and they buy teams, the investment changes. But geographically, England is far more attractive than Wales, right? Because... Because we're more used to fly. You know, most people, if you're going to fly anywhere, you can fly through Heathrow, or you fly through Gatwick, you fly through London, you fly through the UK. And it's going to Cardiff or going to Edinburgh, it's beautiful and it's nice, but you're only going there because it scratches the, you're there because of travel nostalgia. It's not, you know, we want to go there because the historical things, is the historical aspects of going to those countries. But it's not like you... The build-up that England has, and that's why investment there is so much more attractive. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying about player base, do they then have the player base to bring through later on that effects change in for the next World Cup and the World Cup after that? I mean, the next World Cup is Australia, and then they go to America, right? That's the plan. And is that something that's being taken into account?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because I think for Wales right now, they're still so up in their own ass with regards to having financial backing. It nearly derailed them the last Six Nations, and their World Cup was up and down, as you know, because they're such a threat at the World Cup. Every World Cup, they're actually this underlying threat that they can get. They wake up, right? They can get it together. I mean, ask England in 2003. 2019, we really went to the wire. 2015,
and there 2019 was, some... was that generation that looked like they could win the World Cup because they were one of right. the favorites.
And it's that generation that probably could have beaten the Springboks. That's what we, you know, we were just, but we were just that much better. I think we planned. I think Rassi saying, oh, we thought we could only get one World Cup out of them, and we got two. It's a bonus. I mean, they planned for two. I mean, come on. but I feel like as you near load shedding this evening. What time is load shedding?
Hey, oh load no, shedding. I'm at work. Sorry, we talk generators, man. Sorry, generators.
Oh, I see you okay. But as I look into the sphere of what's to come in this competition, I do want Italy to have a win. I do want to see the English play better. Scotland are there and there about. France are, because right now Scotland's going to beat England just on form.
You'd expect Scotland to do England at home, but then the English will be looking at it like, hey, let's, because this is a tasty old rivalry, let's just go piss the Scots. Scots off. Let's just piss them off and go steal it.
Sure, but that should be Italy's fucking mentality every game.
Let's just derail.
We should have derailed England. We should have derailed Ireland. That should be your mentality every time, because to prove them wrong is what's going to be the thing that makes us go, right, this product is worth watching. But it's been a fascinating Six Nations so far. And
there's a story here. You know what? There's a story. There's a story coming. It's 12 February at 10 past 6. You'll quote this time as to, we're going to see some nonsense. I don't know what, but we're going to see some nonsense.
So as we wind down, because you know we've got things to do and lives, and we will do a little run up. Hopefully we can record again. What are we looking at Thursday? A little run up into the weekend with the All Star weekend.
Yeah.
This break from Six Nations, so I don't really know what rugby's actually on. I've actually got to start.
Back to everything.
It's back to everything.
Super
right, so I've actually so I've actually then got to pay attention to what's going on around me.
Yeah.
And are we, you know, and are we excited about the English Premiership football? Probably not.
We are the United fan. They're starting to feel themselves now. Only having to play once a week, United seems to be feeling themselves, because now they are not stressed. And hey, Harry Maguire is shutting me up, man.
This once a week thing is doing some wonders for some people, and it's not doing wonders for other people.
Yeah, look, a lot of these guys were hungover at the beginning of this year because of the amount of football. That's why they had such a horrible start to the league. So, and you remember, and I'm going to tell Arsenal, Liverpool, and City fans this, Man United's remaining cup finals is to make sure that the league race is good by beating all three of you. Seeing that all three of you are in with a shout to win the league, there's nothing more than causing you heart attacks, because I'm a hater like that.
Well, I'm looking at the next game. It looks like it's Luton, right?
Yeah.
Which should be
away from them.
Well, they're 17th on the log. Yeah, it's an away game.
But they're going to rise. You know, they'll see Man United. They'll be like, we are going to become prime Man City today. You know, that's
that kind of, yeah.
And United has been open enough. The thing is, United in recent years has been open enough to invite such teams to dominate. That's what happens when a big team hits a rough patch, is that everybody says that's Man United. They won't say that's Man United playing crap. They'll just say that's Man United who's there to be beaten. And yeah.
I mean, Aston Villa's in fifth place, bro. When
dude, that is a, that is probably the best win. I think that was the best away win of Ten Hag's, because that was a tough team we beat. I thought Aston Villa was going to beat United, and United was like, nah, not today.
Which is something that shows that they've got a little bit of dig deep.
Yes, character. It looks like there is some kind of character building in that United team, because the guys we've been criticizing in recent years, Harry Maguire, McTominay, all these guys, they have suddenly dug deep. They're like, you know what, we've made enough enemies and been mocked enough that, you know what, even in the worst era for a long time, let's just fight. Let's shut our critics up. And that's what a lot of these players are doing. They are delivering. Yeah. Harry Maguire is the comeback player of the season. He's the most improved player of the season. Who would have thought that?
And we've now got to start supporting Ferrari from 2025.
What's happening?
I Lewis Hamilton was...
Choo-choo.
Papa, he's making the things. We must now support...
Making the things in the pots.
Now we must support, because yeah, we don't even know. We are just going there to support now. But everybody's a Ferrari supporter in the back of there.
Ferrari's been part of our
lives forever and a day. And last but not least, as we head off, we're still very upset with the Chicago Bulls for making no moves. Nothing. And what can we do about it? There's just nothing. You know what we got to do? We got to win the lotto. The lotto this side is big. Yeah. The Euro jackpot is very big at the moment. And then we've just got to buy a stake in the team and hope that we gain enough. We have enough money and enough shares bought over time that we can then buy the team and make our own decisions.
You're messing up. Reinsdorf, you're messing up, chief.
I think it just boils down to front office, man. It's the same thing like everything. It's, you know, these are these guys that control these teams. It's, you know, if you don't have good general management, you may as well forget about it. It's
story for another just, day.
Story for another day. But hey, we look forward to being back. Being back again, and we are going to be a bit more regular about this, and you know what, it's fun, it's always good, we will chat again in the week. We'll do the build up to the week,
the All Star Weekend, baby, in Indiana.
Gosh, can you imagine? You stay cozy, people.
Cheers.